Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, calling to you live this week from beautiful Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got a show that Linda and I have been looking forward to for quite some time now. We have my co-host, Linda Feinholz, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda's calling in live from Los Angeles, California. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina. How are you?
I am great. And you?
I am doing fabulously today. You know, you and I have each known our guest today from two different avenues, and it's so much fun to find three roads all meeting in the same place. You're going to be talking with her about mentoring and building businesses and so on. And for me, when I first encountered Stephanie Frank, it was through her book, The Accidental Millionaire. First of all, such a great title, isn't it, Gina?
It really is.
So, of course, that title had me pulling it off the shelf. And I dove right in. And ever since I myself read that book, I've been really engaged by the whole way that Stephanie explains her own journey and has figured out how to translate that in such a wonderful way to each next person who's thinking about this life called entrepreneurship. I make it part of the readings for the people who are members of my programs and students. And I'm so looking forward, Stephanie, to having you join us today and just talking our heads off for a good solid hour.
How fun is that? My goodness, can you ladies hear me okay?
Perfectly. Perfect.
Good. Good. How fun. It is so exciting to be here. I've been very much looking forward to speaking with the two of you as well. We all have a history, so it's great to be able to share all of our collective knowledge and wisdom with your listeners today.
It does. It makes it tremendous fun. Now, I know you've spent a lot of time this past year on the road. Where all have your travels been taking you?
Well, actually, you know, I have been doing a lot of work in-house this past year, even though I've been traveling for, almost 30 years now. Okay, that kind of ages me, I guess. But
since you were a child.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. I started when I was 8. but you know, we have been doing some really, really fun work and making some great strides in business. I have been... I run three businesses. I don't know if you guys know that or not, but two of them are, you know, kind of outward in the entrepreneurial space and teaching entrepreneurs, which I have such a huge passion for, the entrepreneurial skills that they need in order to have successful businesses. We also have, when I say we, we're my publisher and I are re-releasing Accidental Millionaire this year, and which will be really fun. And then I also have a co-author who I've been working with for quite a few years now, and we have a new book that will be coming out toward the end of this year. It's going to be called Chaos to Calm.
Very cool.
It's fun. What to do when you don't know what to do. I've been kind of hunkered down doing a lot of writing.
Perfect. Well, Gina, I'd love it if you would share how you and Stephanie first got acquainted.
Well, Stephanie is one of two people that I consider my mentor. Several years ago, Stephanie and I were both at an event. Stephanie was speaking, and on that same stage was the other person I consider a mentor, Kevin Nations. Kevin was up before Stephanie. Kevin came back and said, if you haven't seen Stephanie present before, you really want to stay and watch this. She's incredible, and you need her. So I stayed and I watched Stephanie, and after her presentation, she and I went back and started talking. And back at the time, I was still relatively new as a coach and mentor, being in this education and training business. I had transitioned out of being a consultant and JV broker a couple years before, and I was working an insane number of hours, typically like 14, 16-hour days, 6 and 7 days a week kind of was my norm.
Sounds very entrepreneurial of you.
Didn't it? Oh, boy. And I was so proud of that, I can't begin to tell you, because that meant I had enough business to be that busy, right? And I also proudly explained to Stephanie how I was such a great multitasker. I could do 6 things at one time. It was only the 7th thing that always was the straw that broke the camel's back. Stephanie's kind of grinning at me going,
that.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. I can't believe she's being proud of this. So here's how busy Gina was. So Gina signs up for this wonderful program that Stephanie has, one of 2 programs ever at a high-end level that I've actually paid for, and then proceeded for the next 7 months to be so busy that I couldn't actually do the program.
Yowch.
Stephanie was not okay with that. So Stephanie kept trying to find ways of making it easier for Gina to actually do what she really knew I needed to do. So at one point, I was going to go to a 4-day live event instead of a 6-month group program. That didn't work so good. And finally, Stephanie called me one day and said, okay, I've got a weekend available. Do you have this weekend available? And if so, how about I come to you and we just do this? And I was so blown away. I'm like, you've got to be kidding. You're really willing to do that for me? So Stephanie magically appeared here in Naples, Florida for 3 days of one-on-one with me. And Stephanie, to this day, that was the most life-changing experience ever for me. In the following 30 days, Stephanie saved me over 53 hours. I actually got a life back. I think if I remember correctly, it more than doubled my bottom line. So now I'm not only working less, I'm making a lot more money. And it totally changed how I do everything.
Well, and you got to go to the beach, and you got to have some fun time, and you got to have some creative time in there, and, you know, some ways that, when you're working, as you know, 14 to 16 hours a day, and that's just, first of all, it's not productive, but second
right.
of all, it's really, really bad for your health. And so you were having some health challenges, and, you know, and it was just making it worse. And so thank you for saying such wonderful things. I mean, I just, you know, I like to recognize people like yourself, Gina, who will actually take the information that I worked so hard to understand, because I used to be exactly that person that you just described. And, you know, it was all looking good on the, you know, on the surface. Hey, I'm working so hard, and, you know, whatever. But all my relationships were bad, and you know, my marriage was failing, and I, you know, I couldn't think straight, and I wasn't sleeping enough. And so when someone like yourself comes along and says, you know, okay, I'm ready to make a change, that's what just, oh, that's so perfect. And there are millions of entrepreneurs out there that are just busting themselves and, you know, killing themselves at an early age because of the stress of doing so. So that's why I'm so passionate about the behavioral change that needs to happen. And they don't teach this stuff in school, Gina.
No, they just don't.
No, I mean, I work every day with people with gobs of letters after their names, and psychologists and PhDs and MBAs and blah, 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 and they are killing themselves trying to make it happen.
And, you know, the bottom line of working with you is I really got to know myself much deeper than I didn't even know that was who I was until I worked with you. And it gave me the skill to develop that once you really know more about who you are and what makes you do anything can really be utilized to be so much more effective in your own communications to really make a bigger impact on the people that you're here to serve. And that has just been huge for me. It's still a big part of my life today.
Well, it's very important in any organization. You know, when you think about the entrepreneurial spirit, let's say, okay, great. You know, you're going to go out and you're going to run a business. Okay, well, you know, it's not natural to be good at every single job. I mean, think about a Fortune 500 company, okay? The president and CEO is not running down to the mailroom and licking stamps. They're just not. They don't know how it works, but it works, okay? So they run the systems. They run the strategy about how to get things done. And one of the things I know that we worked on, you know, when we worked together, is taking a look at who is in your organization, including yourself. What are your strengths? What are you good at? And unfortunately, our school system teaches us the exact opposite. If you're bad at math, they want you to stay after school and practice your homework. Well, just be bad at math. Who cares? That's kind of my philosophy on that. You know, hire somebody that is good at math. And guess what? Everybody gets to work in their strengths. Not only that, but it will. Like you said, you know, you doubled your bottom line. And one of the things that I know we did was we rearranged some people that were causing some frustration because, you know, people try to basically put a square peg in a round hole. So it's, you know, here's a warm body. You should be able to do this job and this job and this job, whether it's administrative or accounting or, you know, marketing, sales. These are all very, very different skills. And so I know we worked quite a bit on that, and that was a huge factor. And I know for people listening, especially if they are, let's say, solo entrepreneurs, and they say, well, Steph, I mean, come on, you're not even making any sense. I've got this small little business. I have to do it all by myself. The truth is that's a story. That's not true. You have to take a complete inventory of who you are and the jobs that you're doing during the day and say, okay, are these jobs that I'm doing during the day, and I often do this with clients, and we did it with you, Gina, where we said, okay, what are all of the things that you're doing, including swishing in the toilets and, you know, washing dishes, and what are you doing at home, what are you doing at work? And if you can take a very, very simple concept like this, and it's very eye-opening, and I'd like to just tell your listeners about that exercise, if that's okay with you.
Please do, because this was huge. Not only was I trying to do everything, but I had a handful of people, two or three people on my team at the time. They told me that they were good at these things. I said, okay, you're good at those things. You're going to do those things. And guess what? That was not who they were. And so I literally was dooming people to fail because I had round pegs and square holes. Oh, my gosh, the thought of that was, like, horrifying. So please do walk them through the exercise.
Thank you. So for anybody listening out there right now, if you are, you know, if you're feeling overwhelmed or you're working way too many hours, you've got to take a look at this. Here's all you do. You take, it's very simple. You take out a piece of paper and you set aside 30 minutes and you literally just brainstorm and you write out everything that you are doing I usually take a week's time frame. And again, that means you're, you know, whatever roles you play in this world, if you're a spouse, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a gardener, if you're, you know, whatever your roles are, all of the things that you have to do. So swishing in the toilets, like I said, washing the dishes, checking the mail, paying the bills, doing the accounting, doing the marketing, doing the Facebook, doing the LinkedIn, the, you know, whatever it is that you're doing in a week, right? Just brainstorm it all out. And then what you do is you take each one of those things and you put one of four letters next to it because, frankly, there are only four kinds of activities that you're doing. Number one is you put an A if it's administrative work. Number two, you put a P, like Peter, if it's production work. Now, production means either the creation of or the delivery of your product or service. That's production. The next one, I tend to use two letters with this, SM for sales and marketing, talking with clients, you know, closing deals, things like this. And the fourth is H for household. And here's what will happen is it will be, like Gina said, it will be so eye-opening because the million-dollar business owners out there have mostly S&Ms on their piece of paper. The people that are struggling have mostly A's and H's. The people that are doing okay, but they're still kind of not where they want to be, are going to have mostly production. And it's quite eye-opening once you take a look at all of these different activities that you're trying to do. And now that you've got that, you know, that eye-opening experience, that can be the beginning of a plan to eliminate some of those things from your plate. Does that make sense, Gina?
It sure does. And boy, was that ever true when I did it. I had very few H's. My husband did most of the household stuff. But, oh, my goodness, the A's and the P's that were on my plate.
Yeah, a lot. And, you know, and then once you were able to switch some things around with the people and get some help, and you know what, and these days there's so many ways to get help. You don't have to sit down and necessarily pay somebody. There's barter options. There are other people in your household. You know, some people have their kids doing some of their work, you know, things like this. And by the way, that's a write-off. And you know, if you have children. And so there's, you know, there are a lot of options. You've just got to use that creative entrepreneurial spirit to say, to really make a decision and say, I am not going to be bound by these things that I either hate to do or I'm not good at. I'm going to find a solution. And it will come. I guarantee it.
Absolutely. And, you know, about 8 or 9 months ago, we had someone on the show who was talking about replacemyself.com and hiring people from the Philippines. I've got two full-time people from the Philippines that do almost all of the administrative stuff in my company. And, you know, they're a whopping $300 to $350 a month for 160 hours of time. That's one extra sale per person. And the amount of time they save me makes me way more than one extra sale per month. So you really need to figure out how can you get the help that you need without it costing you more. In my case, it not only didn't cost me more, it really made me way more money and gave me my life back. You can't really put a price tag on that.
Exactly, and a lot of people don't know. I know, you know, if every client that I work with, I talk to them about, I don't know what site you use. We often use Odesk or Elance or something like that. Which site do you use?
We use Odesk, and then I use replacemyself.com when I want someone on a more permanent basis.
Okay. So that's, and a lot of people, they just don't know, especially if you're new to entrepreneurship, you don't know that these kinds of places even exist. And so I'm thankful to be able to tell people, you know, you can get people for $3 an hour, you know, to do all kinds of stuff and technical things. And, you know, I know a number of my clients, they try to learn the internet. It's like, that's not your business.
You know, right. It really is.
You want to be on the internet? Be on the internet, but you know, just so as an entrepreneur, and this honestly, you know, the FDA did a study years ago, and there are three areas where every entrepreneur will fail unless they know this information, and frankly, none of it has anything to do about money. And I thought when I saw that stat years ago, I thought that was really crazy. So the number one reason why entrepreneurs fail, Dina and Linda, is because of a lack of entrepreneurial skill. In other words, you're so afraid of losing control that you try to do everything yourself. And
This is such a critical issue because there's, I don't know, I've done the really unofficial Linda Feinholt study over the years of the reasons people are, quote, in business for themselves. And a huge percentage of them have left working for someone else, whether it was a corporate job or it was working for another family-owned business or an entrepreneurial business, and their guiding light is no one's ever going to tell me what to do.
Exactly.
Which is not a great foundation for becoming more effective at growing that business, is it?
Right. Or another way of saying that is nobody can do it as well as I can. And that's dangerous. That is dangerous. I remember when I was in my 20s, I started my first business when I was 19 years old. Made our first million by the time I was 22. So it was a strange thing, but I needed control so badly. I remember hiring my very first assistant. I had a regular office, and we went around the office, and I showed her how to work all the machines. Now, here's something you need to understand. I am horrible at machinery, okay? So I taught her how to fax blank pages. I taught her how to make photocopies upside down. I taught her how to hang up on people on the phone. And finally she looked, because I needed control so bad. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do that. And I needed control so badly, as a youngster. And finally she looked at me and she goes, I grew up with, I know how to do this. I was like, oh, okay. I guess you can figure it out then. But that is what so many entrepreneurs deal with. Is, you know, they think they have to learn every single job in the business so they can teach somebody else how to do it. It's just flat not true. So that but that doesn't mean that you abdicate control. It means that you know what you want and you find the strategic resources to reach the end goal, and you manage. In big corporations, it's called management by objective. Okay, Linda, you know this. Gina, you know this.
Absolutely.
It's, here's the result we want, and are you either getting the result or you're not getting the result?
Right, and when I'm talking with people in my program, I say what you need to learn is business matter of fact thinking, and this is the core of it, right here.
Exactly, because that doesn't mean that you can't be spiritual. It doesn't mean that you can't have faith. It doesn't mean all those things. But there are business is numbers, and so if you're going to be all la la about it, well then guess what? You don't have a business. You have a hobby. So you're right. You've got to learn the entrepreneurial skills, and there are a lot of them, and they don't even teach them in Harvard Business School, unfortunately, because they're part leadership and they're part numbers. I mean, anybody can do a profit and loss or here's much money, how much money I made this week or this month or whatever. But how do you really grow and how do you really lead people and how do you really put your heart in there and lead by objective and how do you motivate people? I mean, there's a lot to it when you become an entrepreneur. The second thing, though, is, believe it or not, is a lack of peer support. Entrepreneurs are not, they're not the biggest part of the population. Now, it's becoming a much bigger, much bigger thing, but generally, entrepreneurs do not necessarily have family support or have a lot of friends that are also entrepreneurs where they can talk to and where somebody can understand the entrepreneurial type of thinking.
Absolutely.
It's so important because part of what happens when you, quote, go into business for yourself is you end up there's the real peril of ending up in a very lonely space where you don't have a sounding board for running your ideas against, against the thoughts and experience of others. And you're missing the peer experience. That's the true leverage, that where you can learn as a result of other people's mistakes and learnings rather than having to sow every single one of those seeds and wait for it to grow or die and grow or die as well. So it's
mm-hmm.
a critical issue.
Isolation is a huge issue. And the third third reason why small businesses fail is due to a lack of mentors and advisors. So it's kind of funny because even if you're a real small business, there's no reason you can't, either get a mentor, hire a mentor, or put together, an advisory board. When I was first coming into this business, I sold my computer business in 2000, and I took off some time for a little bit and then decided to write Accidental Millionaire. But I had never been in this particular type of business. like Gina said, you know, she and I have a similar path. I left consulting at that stage. And the first thing I did was I called up five people that I know were ahead of me, and I said, would you please be on my advisory board? And every single, and it was, you know, something we met like twice a year on the phone. It wasn't a big deal, but it was a wonderful way to learn from people firsthand who knew more than me. That requires a little bit of courage to call up people and humble yourself and say, I don't know what I don't know. But that's a really good statement. I love that. I don't know what I don't know. And that's what I did.
And the truth is, if anybody wants to grow a business, no matter what the business is, no matter what industry it's in, no matter what profession they may have come from, that's one of the most important questions that you just shared. I would love it if you would dive in and talk about how that helped you as you were making those transitions and growing these multiple businesses that you have as well. I think it's so important for people to understand how much freedom there is in allowing oneself to ask that question or just make that declaration, I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're going into something new. I mean, right now I'm in the middle of working with a company that that I founded, or I was one of the founders. And before I even go any further to that, let me just say this. I don't do any of this stuff myself. It's all partners. I have tons of partners and wonderful people that are in the right place and working in their strengths. And that is something, obviously, that, you know, I learned from way, way back. But anyway, we're in the middle of this. And, you know, we're in the middle of taking this company public. And this is kind of, like I said, not my public persona, but kind of, you know, behind the scenes, and I've never done this before. So I'm on a new path of taking a company public, and I am not doing it. We have very, very qualified people at the front, and so I call on a regular basis, and I say, okay, guys, you know, what's next? I don't know what I don't know. And they say, oh, well, you know, they're investment bankers and stuff. So it's like, okay, you know, we have to file this paper and that paper and this paper and that paper. And I find that when you can be authentic like that, it doesn't mean you're weak in any way. It means that you're very strong, and it means it doesn't abdicate your duty either. But at the same time, when you're embarking on something new, so if you just left a company and you have had the structure and the, you know, the resources of, let's say, a larger company. I know a lot of people who have done this. And they go, well, what the heck? I have an MBA. Who cares? I'm going to go out and I'm going to be a coach. And then all of a sudden they learn that, well, they have to keep their books and they have to do marketing and they have to, you know, make a choice there and they have to do sales and they have to do all these different things. They're just like, what the heck? Where are my resources? And so that's when people really, if you know, if any of your listeners are in that situation right now, that's when you have to reach out to people like you guys and say, hey, I don't know what I don't know. And that's probably the smartest thing that you can do as you're growing.
And it's also one of the things that people do least frequently.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that really made a huge impact on me, and perhaps you could talk about this for a little bit, was better understanding my personality styles and my values. I
right.
had no idea that there was something called the four quadrants of personality, nor did I
right.
understand that they not only made up who I am, but who every person is and how I could better interact with them. So can you talk about why that's important and how people can learn that about themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. We did that with you, and we did an actual assessment. And here's what people generally don't know. First of all, we run, you know, we operate basically running on what's called our values. And everybody kind of knows what values are, but a lot of people just sort of throw them aside and go, oh, yeah, that's me. It's like a horoscope or something. Well, the thing is your values, everybody, there are about 30 at least of them, and everybody runs based on their top three. And when your values get violated, you literally will not function properly. So, for example, a value might be independence, which is a big one for entrepreneurs. Not meaning that you want to be alone, but meaning that you want to make your own choices, just like Linda just said. That's a big one. Organization is one. Instruction is a value. Intimacy can be a value. And the thing is that once you, you know, again, another exercise, you can literally write down, I don't have to give you the assessment. We have them, and they're on our website and stuff, but we have all these assessments, but you can literally write down, you know, what's important to you. And that's the most important question you can ask. And for some people, you know, they'll have a little bit of trouble. Spirituality is a value. Acknowledgement is a value. And so on. And so some people, you know, have trouble saying, well, I need acknowledgement. And they go, oh, I want to be humble. But, well, no. This is the time for just pure, you know, just between you and the piece of paper values. And here's what happens is you work through, you write down everything that's important to you, and then you work through whatever your top three are. And this might take a little bit because you'll kind of fight with yourself a little bit about it. But you just, again, this is between you and the piece of paper, so you just got to be really honest. And then what happens is this. Anytime you're doing something and you get angry, you get frustrated, you get bored, you get, you know, some of these negative emotions, you've got to look at that piece of paper with the values and say, okay, is the decision that I'm making right now, does it honor value number one? Yes or no. There's no in between. There's no maybe. It's yes or no. Number two, does it honor my, you know, my second value? Does it honor my third value? And here's the crazy thing about this, Gina, is while this is unofficial, I can say I've done thousands of these with people. And what I find is when your first value is being violated, you generally end up with physical problems in your body, generally in the stomach area. When your second value is being violated, you generally end up with problems in the upper area, like the heart area. And when the third is being violated, you generally end up with things like headaches or, you know, problems in the head. And like I said, this is unofficial, but I've seen the pattern over and over and over again. And so if there's, you know, if there's one thing, so how do you apply this to everyday life? Okay, so you're going in, let's say, you have a high value of independence, and we'll just take that one because it's so common for so many entrepreneurs. High value of independence. Okay, great. You don't want to be told what to do. And then you go and you take a job in a factory, and they tell you when to take a break. They tell you when to go back to work, when to push a button, when to do this, when to do that, and when to take a lunch. Now, do you think that's going to violate the value?
A little.
Yeah, completely. Completely. And so, you know, so when you violated that, now you're going to end up with stomach problems and things like that. You can't do it for an extended period of time. So that part of values is pretty much where we start with everything, because it will cause conflict in marriages. It will cause conflict in partnership, in business partnership. It'll cause conflict in friendship if two people have completely different values. And I'll give you another example of that. I happen to have, which you probably already figured out, a high value of independence. I like choice. My husband happens to have a very high value of intimacy. He likes hugs. So he will tend to come and hug me at the most inopportune time. And it doesn't give me a choice. And so we had to really kind of work that through because, you know, his needs have to be met. My needs have to be met. But if you're constantly catering to one or the other, you know, one or the other of the top values, somebody's going to get angry. And so the way we worked it out is things like this. When I'm on an interview, he can't come in and hug me.
You have to get buried.
There's a sign on the door that says, I'm on the phone. I can't kiss you right now because I'm talking.
It's perfect. It's your personal language of love that the two of you had to get very explicit about.
Exactly. But the thing is nobody got angry or nobody got upset because we both have, you know, we've both done the assessments basically, and we go, oh, okay, your need is this, your need is that. And so it's more of a situation to be worked out. And it's a pretty high-level thing because it happens all the time in business, with clients, with, you know, like I said, with partners, things like this, where there's a values violation and people get angry and they don't know why, but that's why.
Well, and in our lives, we had something like this happening when we worked with you as well. My
right.
highest value is I need to feel appreciated. Bill
right.
really wants to feel like I think he's awesome and amazing. And so Bill's
yep.
constantly telling me how awesome I am and how much he loves me. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't
yep.
look like you appreciate me very much. So I constantly kept thinking that he really didn't love me because he was acting in a way that wasn't in alignment with my value of being appreciated. So now
exactly.
every day, instead of telling me that he loves me, he simply tells me how much he appreciates me. And oh my gosh, you have no idea what that does for me. And in response,
oh, yeah,
I tell him how awesome and amazing he is. And now he's super jazzed.
Exactly.
It's the weirdest
exactly.
thing. I would never in a million years have thought that could make as much of a difference as it had.
Yeah, it's huge. It's very huge. And so you asked me to talk about communication a little bit as well. Would you like me to continue with that?
I would love it because building on the example that Gina just gave, when we think about partnerships and business, everybody assumes, oh, well, if we're using business language, we all mean the same thing, but we don't. And an amount of time that I think the three of us spend helping our clients and our students disentangle what's gone awry in communication, it really warrants talking about it.
Yeah, and it's an interesting topic that we're talking about, and I realize this is more about personal communication than it is about business language. But the thing is at the end of the day, if you're a small business, you know, a small entrepreneur, or even a solo entrepreneur, your primary relationship is probably the biggest foundation for you. And so the communication has to be there, and most people don't know how to communicate. So basically there are, I could talk about this for a long time, but I'm not going to. I'll give you the basics. There are four quadrants of personality, and most people have been introduced to some kind of personality test. You know, again, it's sort of like values. It's like, oh, I took the test. Yeah, here's my personality. Okay, bye. But you could go so much deeper with that, especially when you understand how people try to communicate. So first of all, there is, and this is in the Accidental Millionaire, by the way, and there's a mini assessment that you can do inside of the book. So if you're taking notes, great. Otherwise, I'm going to show you how to get the book for free in a minute. So there are four different types. Number one, first of all, is called a driver. And a driver is kind of the bottom line, get to the goal. I don't really care how many people I hurt, task-oriented, you know, cross it off my list kind of person. We all know people like that. The second
Absolutely.
Type of person, yeah, exactly. The second type of person, or of quadrant, excuse me, and I say quadrant instead of personality because, frankly, everybody has all of what I'm about to say, just in different amounts. So the cognitive is the next one, also very task-oriented, but this is a person who really wants to get it right. So they're much more interested in quality, whereas the driver is much more interested in just getting it done. 80% is good enough. And the cognitive personality, oh my gosh, no. They have to do it right. So those are your two task-oriented personalities. Now, your people-oriented personalities, the first one that I'm going to share with you is called harmonious. And this is kind of the win-win. I want to make sure everybody's happy, you know, hates conflict, is very, very attentive, that kind of a personality. Very people-oriented. These are your nurses, the teachers of the world, things like that. And then the fourth personality type is called expressive. And these are your talkers, your authors, your speakers, your salespeople, the people that just love being around people. trying to get them to do some paperwork is an uphill battle. So the way I like to say it is, as we're getting stuff done, is the driver, get it done. The cognitive, get it done right. The harmonious, get it done without hurting anybody. And the expressive is, I'll do it later. Let's go out for a beer.
It's so perfect. And I know people are listening to this, like kind of looking over their shoulder going, I wonder if other people have noticed that about me.
Maybe. Maybe. Maybe.
But
we're all a little bit acknowledging it and a little bit sheepish about who we are, you know?
Well, you know what? But the thing is once you know these things, it causes so much more patience. I'm thinking about my husband. My husband is a golfer. So I'll say, how was your game today? Now, I'm expecting good, not so good. I shot a 72. I shot a 68. I shot a 60. I'm expecting a bottom line answer because I'm very much a driver. He's very much cognitive. So he goes, okay, well, I three-putted hole one, and then we go through all 18 holes. And I'm like, oh, my God, by the time we're done, I'm half asleep. I'm just like, okay, great, But the level of detail that comes out. And if I say, okay, just be quiet, just answer me, he doesn't have that quadrant of personality. And so, I sit and I listen because it – he's giving you the information the best way that he knows how, which is the entire game. And then I have business partners that are, highly driven and highly driver. If they talk to me for more than a minute and a half, that's a long time.
It's so important what you're pointing out, because so many of us want to create leverage in our lives and in our businesses through teaming with others, partnering with others, collaborating with others, and so on. And yet, if you have someone who's a driver, they want to just plunge right in. Let's top line it. Who's going to do what, done? And in a sense, you're making a lot of assumptions about how that other person operates, and then all kinds of dissatisfactions show up.
Exactly.
If everybody's expected to read each other's minds and have lived the exact same life experience and therefore approach things the same way, mean the same thing when they use language and so on. Such a vital issue.
Well, it is. And if you could find the respect. Hello, puppy.
Sorry about that.
Another communicator heard from.
I know that one. But if you could find the respect, because most people just have a lot of disdain, for people that are different than them, and yet it's exactly what you need. I mean, in any kind of a partnership or in a marriage or in a, with your children or with people in general. And as you're building, even if you're a solo entrepreneur and you have to talk to vendors or, you have to talk to a customer service person to pay a bill, just by noticing how they communicate. And again, we don't have enough time to go deeply into this, but just by noticing, are they short in their sentences, driver, are they long in their words, expressive, are they very detailed, cognitive, are they very helpful, that's the harmonious. So just by noticing that and matching some of that communication, as an entrepreneur, you will get people to like you. You will get people to buy from you. You will get all kinds of things that basically they're going to be really good for your business because of your communication.
Very cool. So, Stephanie, nowadays, are there particular types of folks who gravitate towards your programs and to your books and to your programs?
Yes, to my public programs, the types of people that tend to gravitate toward, they tend to be expressive, they tend to be creative, they tend to be people who are, trying to write their first book or trying to build their first business, and they're really kind of clueless and they just kind of don't know what to do. My clients and the people that tend to read things, they're very intelligent. Generally, like I said before, have a lot of letters after their name. They've got a good amount of life experience that they're trying to now, you know, put into kind of an entrepreneurial vein. So those are the people that I've worked with for a number of years.
And are you finding there's some common lessons they need to learn first in order to start on their path to becoming a millionaire?
Yes. I mean,
or deliberate.
Exactly. Well, and you know, a lot of times people, you know, there are definitely lessons. So here's the thing. There are leadership lessons that must be learned at every stage in the game. So at the $50,000 mark, you're going to be a very different leader than you are at the $500,000 mark, and a very different leader than you are at the $1 million mark, and the $5 million, and the $10 million. And so there are many, many leadership skills that we've kind of been talking about here. So values and style that we've just been talking about, those are, first of all, key elements, and you wouldn't think so. You know, most people sit down and they go, oh, well, let's talk about time, or let's talk about money, or let's talk about, well, those are really important things as well, but they're not first. The first is, like Gina said, you have to know who you are so that you can build up your leadership ability. And it seems like a really big thing, and it is a big thing, but if you don't start there, you're going to cause yourself a whole ton of frustration in trying to get things done that you just shouldn't be doing. But second, that is very, very common, is time. I mean, just basic time management skills. And, you know, how do I stop working, like Gina said, 14 to 16 hours a day? And along with that, because of learning more about time, the third thing is leverage. And, you know, I'm like a broken record when it talks about leverage. How can I get this thing done that I want to get done without me actually doing it?
That's the golden sentence right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect it's particularly difficult for folks who are going into business for themselves because there's a passion that they've had, a longing, either some idea or some skill they want to use in their work now that they're becoming independent and building their own business. And it's, in a sense, the toughest thing in the world to be handing off parts of that.
Yes, good point. And you've obviously had experience with, you know, with this as well, is, you know, well, I'm so passionate. Well, every entrepreneur is passionate about whatever it is that they're doing. I don't care if you're making a widget or, you know, putting out a training program or whatever it is. You're right. You go into business for a particular reason. The thing is that passion can get you in some big trouble if you're trying to lead everything with, you know, how do I feel about it? And so the conversation that I know I have with every one of my clients is it doesn't always matter how you feel. You're going to be passionate. You can ride on that. What matters are the numbers. Are you making money? What are you doing, not what are you feeling all the time? And so that can definitely get in the way. I mean, you've watched Shark Tank. Look at all those people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But I'm so passionate, and it's like, oh, you have no sales.
You know, I think that's one of the wonderful things about the programs, and I know Gina is constantly finding programs that, you know, she's bringing to her students as well, is, you know, how do we get the message through to our clients and to our students without us starting to sound like broken records? It's the joy of something like Shark Tank is we make it required viewing, and they get the message from elsewhere, and then we get to build on it, you know?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my gosh, that's funny.
But every once in a while, I have a client who wants to throw something at my head. You know, when I come in and I sit down and say, so, how's business going? And I can see them eyeing the stapler on the corner of their desk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be a problem if I loft it at her?
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it's a daily discipline when you're self-employed, and you've got to get up every single day and keep finding that passion. So I'm not suggesting that you don't run on passion. It's just, They're two completely different things, the feeling and the doing.
Indeed. When you are working with the creatives that are coming and working with you, is there a best first part of their work to hand off and a best first team member to be bringing on board?
Well, that's a great question, and it's going to depend on the exercise that we just did a little bit ago where we wrote down all of the activities.
Yep.
That is, and put the A and the P and the SM and stuff. That is going to tell you who your first best person is. So if you have mostly, like Gina had mostly A's, and so the first thing that we did with her is we got obviously rid of the A's, and those are generally the easiest to get rid of as well. And then, you know, then we started on P's and so on so that she can really focus on the really important parts of her business. So I don't like to answer a question with it depends, but it kind of does. And usually it's administrative to get rid of first.
So let's use your five businesses for a moment. Each of those businesses is probably a different kind of business. One is, you know, public focused. One is speaker focused, speaker training focused, and so on. So as you've grown each of those and figured out what the next level of scale is, what were the stages that you had to stretch and start handing your activities off to in order for you to rise to your next level?
I think I've been in business, Linda, for a very, very long time, and I think I'd like to answer that question by sharing what it was like to be starting.
Perfect.
Instead of what it's like now.
It's a great idea.
When I was starting, as I shared a little bit earlier, my very first employee was an administrative person who could, and I gave away things very, very slowly, but. You know what? It was just, I couldn't work 18, I was working 18-hour days, and I couldn't do it anymore. And so that was the very first. Now, my first company, though, was in technology and in the computer business. And so the next person that I had to hire was a technician, and that was somebody to help. In this case, what we're talking about is basically production. How do you get the work done so that I could go out and I could focus on meeting with clients and doing these other things and not have to sit there and work on the computers. So that's a general and kind of normal progression. It'll be different for every business, but first administrative, then production. Does that make sense?
Absolutely does.
Good.
And I like to tell my people that when they're looking at getting other people on board for the first time, that they want to do it in a way that has them thinking about it as an expense for the first month, but to really look at offloading those things that can turn that expense into a profit center by the second month. So that either means bringing people on to do things that will generate revenue or putting people into roles that free up enough of your time that you can be generating the additional revenue so that by the second month you're more than covering the cost. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, you know, I call that the $10 rule. When I first started, gosh, I really, really hate cleaning my house. And I'm sitting here in my house, and I was just like, oh, gosh, I'm going to spend time, you know, dealing with this. And I hired somebody for $10. And she came once every other week, and I was so broke at the time. And I was just so, like, I couldn't really even afford $10. But I was like, all right, I'll scrape up $10 because I won't go buy coffee or whatever. So because I hated swishing in the toilets more. So I hired her. And she came in, and that $10 person, basically every hour, it was only for 1 hour that she would come in, and my job was to go in and make $20, okay? Because if I'm making $20 and I'm paying her $10, guess what? I'm making, I'm doing another $10. This is that discipline part of entrepreneurship. So as you're talking about making it profitable, Gina, that's exactly how I did it. And her, the $10 became, gosh, could I use you for 2 days or two times, 2 hours? That became $20. Well, guess what? Then I had to go make 40. And that's how I built everything. So the $10 turned to 20, turned to 40, turned to half-time, turn to full-time, turn to one employee, two, up to 15 employees, and that's how I sold my $10 million business in 2000 because of that particular, exactly what you just said, Gina. It was such a great point.
But there isn't any other way to do it, and it really changes your feeling about it because you're not bringing on all these additional expenses. You're really focused so much on it's a profit center, right? It changes the whole feeling of all of it.
Exactly. Incremental. Very important. And since we are, and we've already talked about, you know, how it, you know, way back then, it was very hard to hire somebody for 1 hour. But right now, you can do it, like you said, in the Philippines for, you know, very, very inexpensively. It's just, there's no excuse to bring on a whole bunch of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I started looking at it this way with what you're calling the $10 rule. I love the name of it. Because of pure necessity. I needed $40,000 a month to pay for my medication or I would die in under 90 days. So you couldn't have expenses back then. Expenses meant death. So, okay, there's a bigger why for turning it into a profit center. But boy, looking back on it, it's probably one of the biggest things that has helped me get to the level of success that I've gotten to. Without that, I don't think I ever could have gotten to where I'm at today.
Yep. Well, you've learned a ton about how to cross over those lines and develop new skills in leadership. And it's, you know, it's what every entrepreneur has to go through. So whether you're at the very beginning, you know, or you're, you know, at the multi-million dollar level, either way, this is a very important topic. And you're right.
It really is.
They have to be. Yeah, they have to be.
So you promised to let everyone know where they could get the book, Accidental Millionaire, for free.
I did. And not only can you right now get it for free, but you can also get it's a little over $1,500 worth of coaching materials that I personally use, including the mini assessment and things like this that we've talked about. And you can go get that at very simply at free, freeambook.com, freeambook.com. And I would suggest that you go soon because we are releasing some new books and it's not going to be free for ever.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's such a helpful book. If you guys want to read it, you know, in the digital format, that's great. But it might be one of those books that you really want to get in hard copy, paperback, hard copy, whatever it's available. And it is on Amazon. You can get to it at bbdnow.com/millionaire. And I encourage all of you to go and check out Stephanie's site at stephaniefrank.com. Stephanie isn't a prolific blogger, but she's got quite a bit of great stuff up on her blog. And anytime she's doing a webinar or presentation that you can come in and learn more from her with, it's likely to be up there. So make sure that you sign up for the free book. That'll get you onto her list. She'll keep you updated on what she's up to and where you can learn more about working with her. Stephanie, who do you work with today?
Well, gosh, I've worked with a lot of people. What do you mean, who do I work with? Clients? Or?
Small businesses, big businesses. What kind of audience do you target? So for our listeners,
well,
if they're small business owners, can they get help from you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I kind of run the gamut, Gina. I've worked with everybody from small business, you know, feng shui practitioners and coaches and, you know, individuals, all the way up to Hiltons and Marriotts and big hotels and things like that. So, you know, I've mentored a number of network marketing people to the top of their game, which is kind of cool. And I've also worked with franchise owners on leadership. Business principles are business principles. So they can be applied in any area. Because I have, you know, built my own, well, a couple of them, multi-million dollar businesses, Generally, it's the smaller, you know, the SBA, again, it says that a business that is $50 million or under is a small business. So that's generally where I stay. Yeah, that's generally where I stay.
That's awesome. And that's what I really wanted you to share with our listeners. If you are a business of any size, Stephanie can help you. And I hope you get to experience her as a mentor as I did, because, oh my gosh, it really, I can't thank you enough, Stephanie.
Oh, thank you, Gina. And Linda, it was great, great to be here with you guys today.
Stephanie, it was wonderful. I'm so delighted every time you and I have the opportunity to speak, and I love being able to bring you to such a wonderful audience for your books, for your lessons, for your training. It's quite marvelous the change you create in the businesses that you work with, which creates the leverage effect of each person you work with being able to create a really successful business. I'm so thankful you were able to come spend time with us today.
Oh, thank you for that, Linda. And you do the same, and so does Gina. I mean, it's, you know, we're all out here for the same reason, and that is we want to help people be successful so they can help other people be successful, and that's what business is all about. So we're all doing the same thing, and it's all good.
Absolutely. Linda and I will be back next week. Have a fantastic week, everyone, and thanks again, Stephanie.
Thanks to both of you.
Bye, everyone.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.